This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And Love. Oh, and Love, he's got a real chance now. Peter and Love.
John Walk will take the penalty.
Up goes Dion Dublin.
Unknown goal from Ruddock.
Full back break here for Kiwabia.
Panister and Bruce in the queue again.
Bruce scores!
Ginola. Look at this run by Ginola. Oh, that's a fantastic goal!
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Only Hutton.
No.
Hello and welcome to Quickly Kevin, Will He Score? The 90s football show. I'm Chris Gold. Joining me here is my co-host Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And also Lou Macari in his short and doomed spell as West Ham manager in the early 90s. It is Michael Marden.
Hello.
We've had enough West Ham. I know. We've already done the interview. We had Ian Dowie, who was brilliant. Yeah. I loved Ian Dowie.
Heavy.
Footballers are nice, aren't they?
Yeah, they are nice. Ian Dowie especially.
If you pick the right ones.
I wonder who will be the first one that we don't like.
Oh my God! Maybe we should have a like a safe word in the interview.
Yeah, pineapple.
Yeah, if you see it, it's going to be an awkward interview with Jason Lee while we try and avoid that. Do you want to hear the correspondence?
Yes, please.
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the electronic postbag.
You've got mail.
So, can I start with a just to clear up some confusion? How we often, we ask for reviews, give us your reviews on iTunes, five stars, and put a funny footballer's name as the reviewer. That's on iTunes. People are sending us reviews to our inbox. They're very nice, but yeah. We're not just like desperately appealing for people to send us five-star reviews.
There's
to our
a
inbox.
Reason why we've asked for the reviews and we reward them.
It's not because we're desperately sitting there going, please someone tell us we're great. Just an FYI, just when they come in and it says five stars. Carlos Saba. Hello, boys. Great show. Another review. I was a subscriber to Roar of the Rovers in the late 80s and early 90s and was a big Gary Lineker fan. Indeed, I had a shrine in the corner of my room associated with posters, facts, etc. Middle name Winston, born 1960. Imagined up my delight when I received a free gift in one mag just before Italia 90. Gary Lineker on vinyl.
Whoa.
Was that a drug that I was unaware of in there? Acid.
No, well, you might need a drug you're unaware of because it was. Roy Race and Gary Lineker had produced a record together called Europe United. This was described as hot-rocking heavy metal rap featuring Gary Lineker and Roy on vocals and Roy on lead guitar. It was a double A-side with the Roy of the Rovers rap, which featured MC Wade Lockett on the flip side.
Who's Wade Lockett? Is he a footballer?
I mean, this sounds insane.
I still have it, but unfortunately no record player to play it. But I do recall Gary in very serious tones imploring fans to behave and stay united. As the article quotes Gary, I'm an optimist. Perhaps modern-day Brexiteers could learn from Gary's pro-European agenda.
Maybe if that had been the official theme song of the Remain vote.
They'd put that on the side of a bus.
Would have been a different story.
If you know any other footballers that have released songs with fictional characters, please do get in touch. On music, Dion Dublin Dube update.
Oh, yes, please.
This is from Leon Ford. Following on from your conversation on the latest podcast about Dion Dublin playing the top loader, I have also seen Dublin playing as Dube with 90s indie band Ocean Colour Scene.
No.
Whoa, that's cool.
At Norwich UEA in 2011. If I'm honest, it was the main reason I went. I thought this wasn't true. He sent a link to the review. It happened.
Wow.
Dublin, oh, playing the Dube with a series of indie landfill bands.
Oh, that's a bit... That's harsh on Ocean Colour Scene. That's too harsh.
I think bands talk about, oh, well, they're playing with Dion Dublin, so you know they're over the hill now. A top loader and washed up.
It's the band equivalent of Jumping the Shark. He's getting to play with Dion Dublin in his Dube. On the other side of it, so Dion Dublin's not the only one that left the top loader duet and worked with other people. Hi, gents. This didn't happen in the 90s. However, while listening to Nish Kumar's story about Top Loader and Dion Dublin, I remember that after Swindon Town's promotion in 2011-12, the club held a party on the pitch event with Top Loader as its headline act. For the song Dancing in the Moonlight, they were joined on stage by singer Paolo Di Canio.
What?
He was manager of the Swindon at the time.
Yeah, what did he do? Have a singer?
I've watched the footage. It won't transfer onto the podcast, but he is singing as the lead singer of Top Loader doing Dancing in the Moonlight.
Wow.
We can only hope that the triangle is completed by Dublin and Di Canio releasing an album together. Yeah. Do you want an update on Premier Passions?
Oh, yes, please.
Hi, Josh, Chris and Michael. Loving the podcast. After listening to the latest podcast, I went against your advice and watched the last three episodes of Premier Passions, the Sunderland documentary we reviewed. I particularly enjoyed a couple of moments in the final documentary. After losing the final game of the season at Wimbledon, the cameras head into the bowels of Selhurst Park, where Chris Waddle, Mick Harford and David Kelly are huddled around a small portable television, anxiously following the closing stages of Spurs v Coventry on CFAX. They were seeing whether they could avoid relegation on CFAX.
Oh, that is incredible.
This is why the 90s are such a beautiful time for football.
The thought of those three waiting for the page to turn.
The editor of CFAX on the phone to Bobby Gould, getting another briefing.
And then, another moment, at the end of season briefing to a group of supporters, the chief executive lists a number of players that the club have been trying to sign that season. Top of his list is Paul Scholes.
Well, why not? Who do you want, Peter?
The chief executive claims that they've been trying to get him out of Manchester United all season. Surprisingly, Scholes remained at Old Trafford and won the Premier League title, instead of spending his formative years in midfield alongside Paul Bracewell and Kevin Ball. Speaking of Kevin Ball, he freely admits in a piece to camera that he got as drunk as a skunk on the way back from the Wimbledon game and threw up on the coach, but is yet to apologise to the driver. Keep up the good work, Phil Cartwright.
I'm looking forward to the Premier Passions next series when we dwell into that.
We're going to revisit.
Are we going to revisit it?
Yeah. Oh, we have to. We have to. Yeah. I'm holding off watching it because I want it to be fresh.
I worry I've ruined it. Can I just also say, if anyone has a clip of what Matthew Mark Morgan refers to as David Seaman's guest appearance on Brookside, please send it over to us.
Wow, that's not on my radar. No. David Seaman was in Brookside.
Yeah, David Seaman appeared on the New Year's special of Brookside as himself.
How does he turn up in Brookside?
I don't know. There's not much.
They need help.
Very
digging
few
up a patio.
Details, and I googled. His so big hands helped dear Trevor Jordash. It was New Year's Eve, and it describes as a wonderfully wooden performance, but I couldn't find any clips, although I did find the cast list, and it is true.
Wow.
Now, we've got a new section.
Yes.
Which is 90s transfer rumours.
Oh, boy.
If yes, you please. Remember a transfer rumour, ideally, if you can sort of give us the source, as well as some people have, so that we know that you're not bullshitting us, we've got a new section where we're just going to review the transfer rumours of the week.
Oh.
Have you got a bed for this, Michael?
I sure have.
So, what's the news from the back of the tabloids? Well,
here we go.
Sixth place Premier League outfit Newcastle United have been linked with Paris Saint-Germain striker George Weah.
That is going to happen. I've got a good feeling about that.
Will it? Well, when that happens, also back the idea that Brazil's World Cup star Yosemite is about Simon Dundee United. Now, the old lady of Italian football, Juventus, are to link up with NZ League Division 1 side Oxford United.
Some sort of partnership.
Yeah, it's very exciting. The actual quote, it's very exciting, said Robin Hurd, the Oxford chairman. They're not just going to send us players. Juventus have managed to combine the traditional technical brilliance of the Continentals with the power and pace of the British game. They will be showing us how to do it. This is an actual quote. Manchester United have undertaken something similar with their coaching staff going to Turin to see how things are done. We are hoping to go one step further. Hurd stressed, Juventus don't want any financial influence. They don't want to interfere in any way with the running of Oxford United.
Well, that's actually on the article.
Yeah.
What have Oxford United expected to happen then?
I've read the article about four times. I don't understand what the link-up involves.
Yes.
But the reason for it is because a lot of Italian Formula One firms are based, or were based, I don't know if they still are, in Oxfordshire.
Right, yeah.
So the obvious kind of next link up is Oxford United and Juventus.
And Oxford are expecting Vialli to get off the plane and go, in you go, mate.
Well, they're in the NC Division 1, mate, which is Division 1 when it was the second division. Now,
did you ever do that thing on Champ where you, like, just mess with the database and, like, you're a non-league team?
Did you put yourself in?
And, no, just put a team of world-class stars in, like, the non-league and just see what happens. You've done that, right?
I mean, there's nothing I haven't done on Championship Football Manager, including things I would never disclose. I once put my entire under-14s team, like all of my friends with accurate ratings, into...
With accurate ratings?
Yeah, so if there was me, I mean, I gave myself pace 15, tackling 20, which is not a fair representation of my skills.
You didn't even make yourself an attacker in fiction.
Well, I'm a fullback. I wanted to be Steve Nicol.
You can be whatever you want, mate. I've done this.
This isn't how I saw the transfer rumours section
Sorry,
going.
I know. Championship Manager is a hypothetical world. These are transfers that didn't happen. But in the world of Championship Manager, these are transfers that could be allowed to happen. I wondered if anyone has, like, transferred George Weah to Hendon. What's the most unbelievable season what a player like that has had for you in your fictional Championship Manager?
Oh, yeah, that's quite good. I'm glad we went all this
way
for it.
It was a while. We got there.
Champions Blackburn are apparently attempting to sign Bordeaux's Christophe Dugarry and Zinedine Zidane.
Imagine.
Zidane seems to be part of a lot of 90s transfer rumours.
Do you want an actual quote from Rovers owner Jack Walker? It's reported to have said, "Why do we want to sign Zidane when we have Tim Sherwood?" Thank you to David Grant, James Hobbs, Philip Robertson and Alex Blackburn for those rumours. More next week.
Well, there's all the various pieces of correspondence. If you want to get in touch with the show, email hello@quicklykevin.com. Also, we're on social media, Twitter and Facebook. You know what to do. Right, Josh, it's time for one of the most memorable players I've ever seen play football. Ladies and gentlemen.
Who have we got?
Ian Dowie.
Who met it first? Back in from the big centre half, flicked on by Armstrong. Open on goal! An astonishing one as well by Dowie.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Hello and welcome to Quickly Kevin, Will He Score, the 90s football show, to Ian Dowie. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
Thank you for being here.
I'm so excited.
Good. So am I.
Chris is very excited because of the West Ham.
Yeah, there's a West Ham connection there.
Oh, I'm going to try and not make it all about West Ham.
No, I like that. Can we Plymouth Hoe, that sort of thing?
Yeah, have you must have played against Plymouth.
Many a time, yeah.
Did you play down at Home Park?
Yes.
Tell me. No one else is interested.
I've managed there a couple of times.
Oh, yeah, of course.
One all, we got a late 1-1 draw down there. When Ian Holloway was manager, actually. When I was at Oldham, fantastic. I've always thought that should be a bit of a powerhouse, because if you get a good team down there, it's difficult. The journey's...
It's the biggest city, never to have had a Premier League club. They've got 250,000 people in that city.
Yeah.
If they were successful, they'd have the whole of Cornwall, the whole of Devon, the whole of Somerset. Sorry, I've gone off.
We can't make this episode about Plymouth. So, Ian, on this podcast, we like to ask the hard-hitting questions. Mm. I don't know if you're familiar with our work. We want to talk to you about Luton. Specifically, can you remember your sponsors?
Wow. I think we only had Vauxhall. We had...
Correct.
You did have Vauxhall.
Yeah. One other.
I know that one as well. What was that called? Bloody hell. I've got that shirt at home. Do you know what you won't believe? It's good. It's a side story, but it's worth doing. Yeah. So I collect shirts most after games. Never asked during games, by the way, but you swap shirts. Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to play in Nuremberg and captain Northern Ireland against Germany with who Klinsmann was captain.
Right.
I get his shirt, perfect. As I was telling the boys, I've moved house. So I get my bag up in the loft when I'm about to go. Squirrels have obviously got into the room, right through my Jürgen Klinsmann shirt and Valderrama with a big hair.
Oh,
I had his shirt as well. Gone.
Oh,
to rivers.
My God.
But he looks... I think there's a very, very happy squirrel sitting in the corner fast asleep. I'm actually devastated about it, because actually I always thought I should put it in a frame. Never done it. Too late. Gone.
Well, you could put it in a frame with half squirrel eaten, and there's a nice story for anyone who comes around. Yeah.
On eBay. Yeah. Slight squirrel damage.
Yeah. I can reveal it's Bedford Trucks. Mm. Of course.
Bedford Trucks.
Did you ever get any freebies from sponsors?
A truck?
I've got a car. Not free, but I mean, everyone had Vauxhall cars.
Did they?
Yeah. Do you know what? Les Seeley, God bless him, is no longer here. he was a bit of a wheeler dealer. So you remember him, he used to have the big phone at the back of the bus. He sold me the most horrible Mini Metro. I turned up, was a bit wet behind the ears. I just signed a deal, which was £2,000 more than my job that I left. So it was no big deal. And he sold me this Mini Metro. Can you believe it? I bought it.
Well, there was something about that West Ham team that did feel like a bunch of used car salesmen. So yeah. That doesn't come as a shock. But, so we've had Matt Letizia on earlier in this series, and obviously you played at Southampton.
I did.
He mentioned that Glenn Cockerill was the DJ in the change rooms. Do you remember that?
If you know Glenn, if you want a parody of Rod Stewart, it is Glenn. That's what he does. He's still now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's absolutely the same. That same dyed hair. To be fair, he's in great nick for a lad of his age now. Incredible. But he's the ex-Saint sort of leader down there. But I don't remember him ever being a DJ other than that he liked to sing Rod Stewart songs. So where would he sing them?
On the bus or on the...
No, well, he'd sing them to himself, you know, because he...
Bit of Maggie
May. He thought he was Rod Stewart. We had some powerful people in. In fact, as I remember, Tim Flowers was the DJ in there. Because he used to have UB40. So he always had a bit of rat in my kitchen. What am I going to do?
Don't want that as you're going out.
Yeah. We used to have that all the time. Not rat going out, but in the
squirrel in the attic. That's the problem with you.
Pre-game, we had a bit of UB40, a bit of reggae. Bob Marley is a big reggae fan, Tim Flowers.
Wow. What you like on the music? Did you ever get in the change room and go, right, let's listen to this. Let's get fired up with this.
I was, as you may aware, I was more of a dancer than a listener to music.
Wow. Okay.
What, you don't believe that?
I'm trying to imagine what your signature dance is.
You know what you see in incredulity across someone's face? I understand that. We used to go when we were younger to a place called Royal in Southgate, and me and my brother and a couple of boys used to do a little routine.
Rehearsed routine?
Anyone would tell you I've been any club I've been at, I would be first on the dance floor. That's the way it was.
Oh, wow. And what kind of styles? Tap, modern?
No, it's just purely disco.
Disco?
Yeah, it's purely jazz funk is my big favourite. Why is that?
This
why
is a bit kind of. I can't believe
why
we're going with this.
I just think, I love that.
You're an old fashioned centre forward.
Do you know what?
Have you ever come across Dion Dublin? You know, he's quite a musician.
He's very doob. He's got the doob, isn't he?
Doob. Is brilliant. That kind of thing you're in?
Yeah, I like that. I don't play any musical instruments. So I mean, I don't understand it at all.
But you just feel the rhythm.
Yeah, I think there is some rhythm in where that's come about. you wouldn't judge me watching it West Ham. But...
Don't judge a book by its cover. No.
So when you're at Luton, we'll start at Luton.
Yeah.
Which was probably the greatest Luton team there's ever been.
Yeah, I mean, I just signed after they won the Littlewoods Cup, I think it was. Came into a dressing room full of top players. David Priest, God bless him, he's no longer with us. Steve Foster, Mal Donaghy, Mick Harford, probably one of the best big centre forwards we've ever had. And amazing to me. You know, I was 23, don't forget, so I wasn't a kid. I signed in on the Thursday, trained on the Saturday. I had it's not for me to say, because I had a brilliant training session. It was incredible. I couldn't miss. Anyway, so that's true. And I would never say that. It's not necessarily me to say that. But I did have a brilliant training session. I'd come from not being able to miss at non-league. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sub on the Saturday. We beat Southampton 7-1.
7-1?
And Dunning put me on. I'm sub. So I play in the midweek. I score. We get hammered 4-1 in the Simod Cup at Palace. Against Brighton, Wright and all them. And when I come off, Steve Foster, the captain, who's a great friend of mine now, I'm putting my boots around my bag. He said, don't be taking your boots out of fucking that bag, son. You're going straight back to non-league.
Really?
Yeah. It was a test. So on Thursday, I didn't know it was a test.
Yeah.
But on Thursday, when we get into training, first thing I do when he gets the ball is I let him clear it and wallop him. and he says, you might do well here. That's what it was.
I don't understand that. Yeah, I don't understand.
They want to see if you've got anything about you.
Such a snowflake when it is. I'm such a kind of soft.
I would just be spending that transition thinking, he's so mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what? I think you can do that. You'd be able to do that now.
Mm. Yeah.
Then you couldn't. I mean, they'd just run over you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you had no... So, do you know what? It sounds bizarre. I pride myself I'm really trying to train hard, you know, when I've trained. When I went into the dressing room, there's a bottle of whiskey and 8 glasses around the outside. And 6 or 7 of the lads have, boom, before they go out and out.
Wow.
Have a shot, yes. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So now they have umbrellas and
a little apple sours.
Yeah, they're good, yeah. So there's someone who's had an apple sour. Right?
Did you ever have a shot?
No, I mean, many people thought I'd had several shots with the way I played, but that wasn't me. I mean, I never really tried. I'd never really have a drink ever before. Yeah, I might have a glass of wine with my wife on Wednesday, and then, don't get me wrong, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday were big days then. They were. They were just what it was.
Yeah.
Luton was the drinking school on Tuesday afternoon, was the Tuesday club.
If we could touch on just before Luton. So you came from Hendon, where you scored 47 goals in 87 games.
Yeah.
That's an incredible record.
Yeah.
You must have been smashing them in all the time. Weren't you like, well, obviously, I should be in the top division.
Do you know what's interesting? I was the top paid player by that time, and I had to give 50% of my fee. Went into a pot that the lads just put behind the bar. So, what? I mean, don't forget, I was earning quite a bit of money. Yeah. Half of it was going straight to the lad who was probably on nothing.
But what, your fee was being...
Everyone. Every single one had to do that. Half your money went into a pot behind the bar to have a few beers after the game.
Wow.
Chelsea, Doncaster, Sheffield United and Luton who wanted to sign me. It was a case of what did I do? Harry Bassett offered me less than I was being paid at work.
Because you had a job, right?
Yeah,
I was
a missile engineer.
Yeah, you were making missiles.
You
were a missile engineer.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I did engineering and did a master's in mechanical. Yeah. So that was what I stumbled into. They sort of sponsored me to go through uni, which was nice. And then I came in, I was environmental engineer. So that was, for example, when you go to Iraq or wherever on the tornado, there'd be missiles hanging from the tornado, okay? What I'd have to do is test that during that flight, not going to drop off or bits in the missile are going to break loose.
Steve Foster after that isn't that scary.
No, but I had to replicate what could happen to that missile during air flight, freezing cold weather, rain, bump landings. So we had to replicate what the journey of the missile would be, make sure it'd work.
So what do you do? Just challenge it for a header?
Well, yeah, I don't remember that.
So after Luton, West Ham. You were a boyhood West Ham fan?
Yeah. Absolutely died in the wall boy.
Really?
Yeah.
So I've been. I love that.
I've been locked out many
times.
I can't believe
we've moved on to West Ham already.
Don't we? We've got two spells to get through, so.
You know when you go there and you know you've been locked out on a Boxing Day trying to watch a Spurs game? You know, that's what it was. And you stood in North Bank with your dad and blah, blah, blah. And it, you know, though it didn't go a lot because we lived in Hatfield, but we went quite a bit. And then you're playing for your club. And I'd love Billy Bonds and. Yeah, some good people under him, you know, Harry and Frank Lampard, you know, stalwarts of the game, Frank particularly for West Ham. And then you walk in there, you've got amazing young players in and around you. You want to be there, do okay. Yeah. And then in the summer, Armageddon at Southend. I think we had a friendly at Southend or something. I'd hurt my ankle in training and he pulled me and said, Billy Bonds just said, oh, I've sold you. I was absolutely... We got promoted.
You're a hero.
I was absolutely devastated.
He just came up to you and said, I've sold you.
Well, I understand it now. In them days, you know, he had money issues. They went down the following year, actually.
And do you have a say in whether you're being sold?
No, I had no say then. He just said, you'll never play again.
Well, what about your negotiation with the clubs you're getting sold to?
That didn't come into it. Then you just had to go.
it's like a slave trade.
That's exactly what happened. He said, you want to go? And listen, West Ham went down the following year at Southampton. He came up to me afterwards and said, listen, we had to do it because of no money. So looking back, I've got the ultimate respect because he had to come, you know, he told me exactly why he did it, but he couldn't tell me at the time.
But so Billy Bonds are training. I've heard that you were obviously quite a physical player, but those training ground games would be really physical. Like Julian Dix was probably on the scene then smashing around.
Yeah.
Did you ever get in a few fights with Billy
Dixie?
Bonds?
No, I thought with Billy Bonds. I mean, Billy didn't play then, but I can say that we had a lot of fit lads. I tried to keep up with, you know, in terms of long distance. And I remember Billy Bonds running backwards past us on a pre-season run. He was that fit.
He was so fit. He retired at 40, didn't he?
Incredibly fit.
Yeah, so was your kind of, when you come back from pre-season back in those days, it's just go for long, long runs.
Absolutely thrashed you.
Really?
So I don't think it's...
And where would you run? Just around kind
We'd run...
Chigwell?
Yeah, we'd run Hainault Forest and all them places. You know what I mean?
Seeing that scene.
The trouble is, the lads were trying to get a route that you could get rid of a boozer and come back later.
And someone would take it dashed in their shorts. But so you get sold in 1991. You go to Southampton, but the club that turned you down when you were 16. So was it? How did you feel going back there? When
I mean Ian Bramford was very good for me. He was getting pelters at the club. I really felt for him. Strong man, walked down that touchline with abuse that I'm not sure I could have taken when I was a manager. But he took it on the chin, was very good with me. And I had a difficult start, but ended up scoring some important goals later on that sort of turned it around a bit. So he left his out initially to get him fit. And then I was playing alongside him. He's made my bad headers look good. I mean, he's probably technically the best striker of football I've ever seen. Naturally, just can do it.
Were you there with Shearer and Letizia?
Yeah.
Who was the better player?
Well, different then. I mean, Letizia was a little bit older. So, I mean, Alan's gone on to be amazing. I mean, I think if Tiz had moved, he could have been anything, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure he hasn't regret not moving. I mean, he's done incredible things with goals. He
was the most naturally talented English player, I think, of my lifetime, Matt Letizia.
Yeah, I wouldn't dispute that. He used to do this thing, he'd come out and people would talk about he wasn't fit. He was fit.
He said he had two sausage and egg McMuffins.
Yeah, he may have that, but he still was fit. He was a good athlete,
yeah.
To be fair. People had that then. Listen, when Razor was there, that was just a snack. And he'd come out and he'd throw a ball in the air and it bounced on the halfway line. Everyone had been out there stretching. He wouldn't do all that stretching. And the ball would bounce and he'd say, "Where do you want it?" And the lads would say, "Crossbar." From the halfway line, remember, he'd half volley it. 7 or 8 out of 10, it hit the crossbar.
Unbelievable. Wow.
Now, what I'm saying is regularly, it wouldn't. That's not a one-off. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but at least 10 times out of 20, he'd hit the bar. But he had that belief. He'd go for it and go. He didn't care if he missed.
Yeah.
I run through thinking, bloody, just hit the target. He's thinking, I want to put it right in the top corner, and make him look a mug.
Yeah.
Because he had that ability.
Yeah.
And do you know what? That confidence is something that I think as a manager. I never had it really as a player, but when I've gave players that as a manager, Andy Johnson, I've got that confidence in him, what he could do.
Were you there the day that Alan Ball allegedly lined the team up and said to everyone, just pass the ball to Letiz. This is the only way we're getting out of this.
Well, I've been in the dressing room when he's actually said that. So he doesn't say the same thing. It was a pre-season. He's actually said, "Oh, you must suffer that so he can thrive." And we had some... we had some big characters. Terry Urlock, he wasn't having that. So, and he'd been on the pop the day before, so he popped out. But yeah, we had some big characters in the dressing room. I mean, massive characters at Southampton. It was just a fantastic time.
Was there any resentment
time.
Towards Letiz?
No, not one. And, you know, to be fair, Alan's gone on and achieved great things. I mean, until I went with him in Newcastle as coach, I didn't realise why he went there. I understand why he went there now, because... In a heartbeat, if they were in the top 4 or 5, they'd get 75,000 if they could. It's the epicentre of the town. Everyone loves football. And the atmosphere, it was. I've never experienced anything like that, ever. And I've played in Seville in Spain, when it's amazing. That was the best atmosphere I've ever experienced.
Wow. What was the atmosphere like at Kenilworth Road?
Yeah, good, good. Good, we had, when
you had the plastic pitch.
Yeah, perfect.
What was that like?
Well... Bernie. He's covered in sand. If you fell on it, it ripped you to shreds.
So were other teams like scared of playing on the park?
We beat, I think that the second season I was there when I played most games, I came back from loan Fulham. I think we beat Arsenal there. We beat Liverpool, who were the best teams at the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we regularly beat the best teams there because we were used to it. And it was an advantage. You can't dispute that. But great for me because I came from non-league. I had to get used to the speed of the pitch, and Mick Harford, who was the same size as me, but his feet were gifted. You know, I had to try and fill his shoes. Impossible, really. But we had
so
to.
So what's it like? Is it just bouncier and fast?
Bouncier, yeah. It's also if you fall on it. Yeah, you know, many people have third-degree burns and all that, and you get infections. Funny enough, I played. So I signed for West Ham from Luton. We played Oldham away. We went there anyway. On the pitch there, I fell over a couple of times and got massive burns on my legs. Massive third-degree burns. So when I came back from my home debut against Barnsley, I was wearing them Vulcan shorts, you know, the big pair of pants. Now, with all due respect, it's not the greatest look in the world. But I'm having the shocker of all shockers. So I look up and my dad, who's no longer here, but I'm my biggest admirer, he's going at me. Now, I know when he's doing that, I'm having a shocker. So I somehow, last half-time, I really should be taking off, I was that bad. Billy's thinking what he's bought here. Anyway, would you believe it? Martin Allen crosses the ball. It spins off the shoulder. I go ahead. I'm playing that bad. I head it. It hits my shoulder, loops off my shoulder, goes right in the top corner. It's the goal that got us promoted. We beat Barnsley 3-2. Massive get out of jail card. I was hopeless. Absolutely hopeless. Hopeless.
What was it? The pressure?
No, just I couldn't run. I was feeling terrible. I had these big Vulcan shorts on. I had third-degree burns. I felt and my touch, which was never really silky, was even worse than it ever was. So
we were meant to win the league that day, weren't we? But wasn't there champagne in the dressing room and everything was ready? And then the Oldham result went against us, and we ended up not winning.
But I think the champagne was in them days. It didn't matter. You went out.
just forgot
what's
that.
No, even I think even Balsy, they were struggling at the time. I think that we passed half a case to them at the time.
Cheers, so you ended up going after Southampton. You went to Palace,
yeah,
and suffered. I think your first relegation. Mm. Not a happy time at Selhurst Park.
I mean, they signed me and Ray Houghton late on. I think I got there February or something at the time. And I remember Chris Coleman saying to me about time when I walked in the dressing room. It went very well for me, but we end up we just couldn't do enough. I mean, in terms of goals I scored, it went all right. But if you get a relegation, and that squad should never have been relegated. You think about
it's
Southgate,
good team, yeah.
God, Chris Armstrong, Chris Coleman. Martin, yeah. Some great players.
How does that happen when you've got a team that's got that?
I don't know. I think it just you get on that run, you go. Then don't we signed me and Ray Houghton signed. So that was sort of if you like, we had a decent team. We got the quarter final of the cup.
Yeah.
Yes. Good.
Semi final of the cup and got beat. One of the fans died in the first leg. It's Man United. Drew 2-2 and we got beaten in the second leg 2-0. Anyway, we end up going down. What can you do? You can't.
Yeah.
It's what it is.
Was there any danger of you sticking around? Or like,
yeah, well, I played the first game.
Yeah, yeah.
I scored twice. We got beat 3-2 at home to Luton. And then they sold me.
Yeah, so, back to West Ham. So Harry Redknapp calls you up. Ian, I need you building some missiles over here up to me.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
I think I've had a few explosions off my shins when the ball... or when I try and control the ball, it keeps going away. But yeah, so it was just...
Harry Redknapp must be an exciting manager.
Do you know what he was great at? He just doesn't get the credit because he's a very good coach, Harry.
Yeah.
You know, very good coach. Doesn't do all of it all the time, but he's very, very good when he's ever talking to you. And he was very good at managing players. You know, that's how he did it. And he knew he had a strong... We had a strong group. And in the following season...
He brought in
season,
quite a lot of kind of dodgy imports.
Florin Radachoyu, Ili Dumitrescu, Paolo Futre.
What player he was, Paolo.
Yeah.
So, Paolo.
Do you know the story about that? I mean, no. Must know the story about Paolo Futre.
About his number, the squad number.
Right, it's a brilliant story. We turn up at Arsenal, first game of the season, and John Moncur, I think it's number 14.
16.
Is it 16? Yeah. Is that right?
16. Yeah, I
can't remember. I thought it was 14. You sure? No, it might be. Anyway. Anyway, it's his number he's always played in. Yeah. So he turn up and he's in the team. He sees his number, 10 or something it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he says, I cannot play. It's not my number. What? So this discussion going. It's incredible. In the end, he packs and just goes home.
No!
Like John Moncur, he was very clever because he said to him, you can have my seat. So he gave him 3 weeks in his villa in Portugal for changing his number. So I think it might be two or three weeks.
Did he play the game?
No, he didn't play the game. Yeah. He went home, got a taxi.
Just because it was the wrong number?
Yeah.
That is insane.
Yeah.
What did Harry Redknapp do?
What could Harry do? It's difficult. Do you know what's great about Harry? No, a lot of other men would have reacted badly, but Paolo was a good player. I mean, he didn't play enough for us.
He retired, didn't he? Yeah. Like, after a few months.
He did, yeah. But Harry just didn't let him affect him. And he was good at that.
Yeah. You know? And were the other players annoyed at him? Or just found it funny?
They couldn't... You were shocked. I mean, you're Arsenal. You've got every chance you're going to get hammered. Anyway, at the time. But it was something... He passionately believed in it. He obviously thought that his agent had sorted it out. It hadn't been sorted out, and it didn't matter. We had a lad called John Harkes, remember him?
Yeah, John Harkes.
John Harkes is amazing. Could do any sort of imitation voice. He could do, Carey.
Jim Carey.
He could do Florin. He could do Dimitrescu. Oh, really? So he did that. Brilliant. So, it was good
fun. What a range. Jim Carey and Ili Dumitrescu.
Yeah, no, but he had that ability. He used to do brilliant, the Godfather as well. Incredible Godfather.
he's
brilliant. Have you ever seen him? He's a funny man, John.
We should get him on.
He's a great lad. He's living over there now. So. Tottenham away. And I'm playing up front with Danny. Who is
the Portuguese?
Portuguese Danny,
yes.
Who is
very attractive young man.
So you're a very attractive young man. I think he's got the Daily Star. I think he's invited to every party of Daily Star, and he's involved with a load of the girls that work for the Daily Star. So anyway, we play in the game. I flick the ball, and he scores 1-0. So I think he gets man of the match. We're talking about after the game, and he comes in, and the lad says, Ian, how's it? Blah blah blah. Ask Danny, who doesn't speak a lot of English, so they've come to me chatting away, and he says, well, how's it important for Danny to get, a goal? I said, it's very, very important. But more important, it's about time West Ham had the best-looking centre-forward partnership in the country. So I think at time, I think Harry finally gave up the ghost on him when he'd had maybe a cab driver told him that he'd had a party at his house and it didn't finish till 5 in the morning. There was numerous girls and drink involved. So I think that Harry then pulled him and said, this is not going to quite work. But I thought he had great potential. I don't know what he went on to do. I think he's back in Portugal now, but he could have been a talent.
Yeah.
I think, wine, women, and song.
Harry,
the rest is just wasted.
Harry Redknapp said, he's so good looking, I don't know whether to play him or fuck him.
No, that's fair. That's a fair comment. He said that to me a few times, but not in that way.
So some homegrown English characters as well. And I say character, John Moncur. Everyone's got a good John Moncur story. I wanted to ask you about his nickname, Maggot. Can you illuminate the guys on how he...
I think I can have a guess myself. Would I be right?
So I go to play golf with John. So I'm on there, him and his dad's there. Me and I think it might have been John Hartson, maybe he's one of his brothers. Anyway, so it's all three of us waiting on the tee, and Johnny comes, John's got his bag on, he comes round the corner with his shorts around his ankles, and he's got no underwear on, or he's naked from the waist down, and he's gone to his dad, "What the bloody hell is this, Dad?" He said, I blame you for the maggot. Pull his trousers up, zips his belt up and smashes a drive straight down the middle. So that's the maggot.
And that sums John Moncur up generally.
No, he's a brilliant, I'll tell you what, a really good, technically one of the best players I've played with. Yeah. Nasty little piece of work in the tackle. Yeah, in the tackle, for the size of him, no, he could get rattled in. He was great fun, Johnny. I mean, him were big friends and still are. So
We can't talk about this second spell at West Ham without Stockport away.
No, we can't. Well, do you know what? It's the only ground.
I know you've been
asked
about this.
It's the only ground in the country where I get a standing ovation. Do you know what? No one knows. Well, maybe they do know. I broke my leg in that game.
Yeah.
You broke your leg?
Yeah. Well, we should say as well, if people don't know what we're talking about, you scored an own goal.
An own goal.
It was quite possibly one of the most spectacular finishes.
I mean, Ludo should say this. If I look back, what was I thinking? I don't know. It's just running. It comes out of the sky. Probably have gone a long way without getting a goal.
Yeah.
Probably desperately need one.
So were you on a run of not scoring at this point?
Yeah. Ugh. I wasn't trying to score, just so you know. It's just an error. But you know, it's one of them things.
And you were playing in that game because Florin Radichoriou...
I believe so, yeah.
Didn't want to play.
Yeah, I mean, I'd played most of the game. Harry, said he was going to give me a rest and then said, "Will you pass it?" Of course.
And Radichoriou didn't want to play because he was shopping.
Yeah, Harvey Nichols.
Yeah, Harvey Nichols, yeah.
But were you like, when Florin Radichoriou goes, I'm off shopping, hey, the lad's like,
"Do you know that's happened?"
Don't you show your face?
No, we knew afterwards. My view is, you can't believe that day, the shock that must be for him to come to a culture where no one really speaks his language, no one even he's got no, apart from his wife at home, it must be very difficult that, there's liaison officers and interpreters, and rightly so.
Because,
you know, how many English players have gone to abroad and been a massive success? You know, it's the same thing. We've really got very much better at that. So no one really blamed, because he was technically very good. I thought he'd score goals. He didn't, and so...
So they bought Hartson and Kitson at the same time, more or less, to try and... And they did save from relegation,
When
there's... players brought in that play in your position. How is it awkward between you? Is there any kind of...
No, I got on famously with Johnny Hartson. He lived the same area. We used to travel together. Yeah, it's still competitive. Cause, you know, every game you knock on the door and say, "Well, I'm not playing." It's what it is. You've got to get on with it. I mean, I didn't want to sit around. So eventually, you know, unless you start playing, you're going to move on. That's just... You know, I didn't want to sit there and do nothing.
Yeah.
But, well, I suppose at my stage...
You're not Carlo Cudicini.
No, I was 30, getting 30, sort of 31. Then, obviously, Ray came and took me to QPR.
So he got you down to QPR after West Ham and instantly converted. You said you're a coach now.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah, first day.
First day?
Walked in the building. He said, "Come here, you can take the forwards." What?
Do you think he looked at your CV, saw that engineering degree, and went, "Hello"?
I don't know what he did, really, but I had a lot of time for him. Don't forget, he'd signed me for Luton, so it was a bit of a comeback. And he'd seen some... Well, I'd seen something in me. And then, unfortunately for Ray, he got the sack, and that's terrible to say, because I've learned an awful lot. But Jerry come in, Jerry Francis, and I learned so much from him too. So two very good coaches that you learn so much in a young career. I mean, we had Terra Tuesdays there.
What's Terra Tuesdays?
Oh, Terra Tuesday is... It's like you being on stage with the five worst audiences in the world consecutively. That's all I can say. You know, so people who really hate you as a comic consecutively. It's just Armageddon. Well, I can tell you this is a true story. In a winter's day in February, we had Tuesday, it was running, so, you know, you either did these short runs or the long runs, which is a killer. Under clock, you had to be there. 15 started, 3 of us finished.
No.
The 12 runs. So everyone either got injured. Yeah, 12 dead. and to be fair, the one of the lads on the last one, on the 12th run, fell over the line, was sick everywhere. So it was brutally hard.
Were you one of the three that finished?
I was one of the three. A little bit behind Kevin Gallen and Danny Maddox, who was probably the best of them.
Who was the first one to quit?
I think Richard Langley was first to quit because he was sick. The first run, I think, was a box-to-box halfway line. Box-to-box halfway line, which is the hardest one. That's the double-double.
I remember.
Double-double.
So box-to-box halfway line, box-to-box.
You've got to do it in 1 minute 34 or something.
Oh, my God.
And if you know it, you've got to do it again.
Oh my God.
I remember that from Football Channel. Yeah. Horrible. Let's talk a little bit about your international career. So yes. We had Ellis James on earlier this series. He was talking about the Bobby Gould era for Wales. And it seemed like it was a little bit of a shambles. They advertised in the local newspaper for the national manager at one point. Northern Ireland and Wales, like similar, I imagine, kind of set up around that time.
Yeah, but Billy was...
What was it like?
Well, Billy, I turned up with Billy Bingham, who was very, very good with me. But I had this unique thing where you'd, and this is, you sound bizarre, but this is absolutely true. On a Friday before the game, he'd come out and he'd walk round the pitch and grab you and say, tell you what you're doing. Well, the lads, so the pitch would be here, and he'd walk here, and the lads would walk to this corner. And as he'd walking along, they'd walk to another corner. This would go on for 20 minutes.
So they're walking around avoiding the pitch, like avoiding him at the other end.
Yeah, yeah, but because it's funny.
This is the country.
Anyway, he then says in the first time, so he ends up calling me, I think. So I go over and he says, his exact words, I'm playing, we're Malta away, I think is one of the first guy. I go away with this one. I'm the 17th man. I didn't know that at
all. Very much a six-pointer for Northern Ireland.
But in Valletta. But and this is exact words he says to me. He says, congratulations, you're 17th man, you can sunbathe this afternoon. And that was it. And he just smiled and walked off. That was it.
You can sunbathe?
Yeah, because I did, because I wasn't 17 then, so I didn't get changed. I was only 16 then. So he said, you can sunbathe this afternoon.
You went back to the hotel.
Then the following game, he said to me, oh, congratulations, you're 17th man, you can wear your big coat this afternoon, it's a cold night. and I got on great with Billy, he was amazing for me, and then sure enough I was in the team, and we still did the same thing for three years while he was there. You'd follow him around the pitch. And then when I sort of became more senior, I would say, yeah, come on, let's do it. It was the stupidity of it, childishness of it.
Did he care?
No, I think he just went along with it.
The thrill of the chase.
Yeah. You know what he used to do? He said, we have dinner on a Friday night, Billy, it was brilliant, and he used to say, the girl would say, can you have anything to drink, Mr. Bingham? And he'd say, yeah, can I have a bottle of Budweiser? Every time, the girl would walk away with his order, and you'd wait just as she gets, excuse me, chilled. He'd say that to her every time. And you know what? It became an annoyance for me, because why didn't he tell her at the time?
Can't you just say,
can I have a cold Budweiser? But, you know, that was, I mean, he was a lovely man.
Yeah. And what was the closest as Northern Ireland that you got?
Well, I missed a chance in the game against Latvia. I think at home we missed out, and then we had the playoffs where we got beaten by the Republic. But anyway, I mean, amazing places we've been. Just some trips you had. Thailand.
What was the training grounds like? When
rubbish.
You were going?
We trained at Mollusc. Laurie McMenemy came as manager, and Laurie's a big man, and it's not criticism of him. So it was the windiest place in the world as well to train, and our kit was unbreakable, with baggy stuff at the time, and it was really baggy. And he was a big man, Laurie, and we were warming up, stretching, and it was one of them unbelievably windy days, and he was walking towards us. One of the lads in the crowd, Sharon Levin, said, here come the Belgians. And you remember from It's a Knockout?
Yeah.
You know, when you got... he was getting buffered by the wind. It's probably one of the funniest comments. I mean, for me, it just tickled me. He'd ever said it.
Laurie McMenemy, Paul Merson told us he had a little catchphrase when he was England assistant, which was, do what you do for your clubs.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear that?
Yeah, I did say that. Yeah, do what you do for your clubs. Yeah, I can remember him say that. I actually remember him saying as well... he said before the game, he said, if you're any trouble, kick it in the River Tyne. Well, it's the River Laggan in Belfast. That's probably my place at the time.
That's clever Dowie with his degree again.
wasn't there that long, but he had a good relationship with all the players.
So the highlight, I think you said, for your playing career, Jack Charlton said you were man of the match when Northern Ireland drew with Ireland 1-1.
I was the first Ulsterman to score at Lansdowne Road. So in terms of moments, I captained Northern Ireland 12 times, and my dad was my hero, really, and the tragic lost him, as I say, in 1997. And I looked up and he had tears in his eyes. And, now I look at that, I've been to see my son graduate, and it's the same feeling for me, so I understand where it is.
When you're at the ground and you've got people there...
Yeah.
How aware are... Because when I do a gig and I've got people... I don't like people I know being there.
No.
Because I'm just thinking about... Like, are you aware that...
To be fair, Josh, you're probably performing bigger numbers than Northern Ireland is.
No, but it is less funny.
Yeah. But in general, you never know. You never think about them during the game.
No.
That wouldn't worry me, anyone coming to the game.
And then finally, we've got a feature on this podcast called the Phil Thompson Directory. Ken Monku. Someone said to us that he's running a pancake factory in Holland, or a pancake
shop.
Place. Pancake
I don't
shop.
Know really? Such a thing as a pancake factory.
Yeah, I was going to say, as I said it, I realised that doesn't make sense. Yeah,
no, well, I'm not sure Ken's running a pancake. I spoke to him a couple of months ago. I don't.
Oh, well,
listen,
oh.
And to be fair, although he did play crepe sometimes, I'm not sure. Boom, I'm here all week. But, got to say, that wouldn't seem to me to be a logical fit with Kenny, because he was supreme athlete. You know, he's the first lad to wear short sleeve shirts, put Vaseline in the bottom of his arms, so you couldn't grab him.
Really? Oh, wow.
Very good idea, actually, when you think about it. So when you set it forward, you grab someone. Yeah. Your short-sleeved shirt.
You don't want to touch him?
And you just slipped off him.
Oh, really?
And to be fair, he was a sizable beast. I mean, 6'3". Yeah. He was powerful.
Yeah. Well, maybe rub a bit of dog poo on yourself. So on that note, Phil Thompson, director, a couple of people emailed in and said, now you're doing house surveys.
Well,
it's true. What is this? Is it true?
It's true. We work for a go-to surveys. We do surveys, mortgages and conveyancing. And I got in it, one, because the house ran over budget, and two, because I hadn't got back in and I do this all the time. So we've done, I think I've done about 60,000 miles on the road this year. I've cut a frosty ones down in Charlton, so we won't be doing that. Thank you very much. Another one. Anyhow, it's not in the way.
Are they surprised when you show up?
Yeah, some are. Yeah, yeah. I had a lad yesterday say, you look not like Ian Dowie, so it was fine. Yeah. So, anyway, in a heartbeat, I'd like to be in football again, but... Meanwhile, you've got to do what you've got to do, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Have we covered?
That's great. That's a great ending.
No, good. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for doing
it. And thank you for your efforts for West Ham.
Very kind.
Picked up again on the edge of the area by Bishop, who does well to get the cross in. And Ian Dowie scores for West Ham.
There we go, gentlemen. Ian Dowie, Josh.
I loved Ian Dowie. What a nice man.
He's such a nice man,
so
isn't he?
So nice. I was a little bit scared before that interview because obviously he's a sort of no-nonsense centre-forward.
Yeah.
And there was a part of me that was like, oh, God, this might go badly. But he was amazing.
Yeah. Normally we don't talk at this point about what's gone on, but we do need... Well, normally we're like, let's just skip to the end of the podcast and get it... Like, this bit's meant to be short.
Yeah.
But we do need to talk about the fact John Hark's...
This is an impressionist.
did three separate impressions.
I'd love to,
which were The Godfather,
Jim Carrey,
and Ely Dimitrescu.
I was thinking as well, because he's American, I'm obviously thinking about the guy from Police Academy the whole time he's telling that story.
I like the idea that John Hark's goes through the rounds of Britain's Got Talent. So first week, he nails The Godfather. Semi-finals, he nails Jim Carrey. In the final, he's got a fullback on Ely Dimitrescu.
I mean, he comes out in a 94 Spurs kit. They're like, oh, what's he got this week? What's Hark's got this week?
Yeah, I mean, unless Cowell's a massive Spurs fan, he's in real trouble.
Who's this generic Romanian he's doing here? It's Dimitrescu. Can you not tell?
Brilliant Dumitrescu character. Which is the greatest revelation of any interview we've ever done.
Yeah.
And just so, what I like is, because people are in football, is normal every day to them. So to Ian Dowie, the fact John Hark's does those impressions is not interesting.
That's right. Yeah. That's...
To us, that is exactly why I'm doing this job.
Yeah.
I'd like to. I'm going to watch an interview with Ely Dimitrescu when I get home, just to see whether he's got quite a clear style.
Word of warning: check it is Ely Dimitrescu, because apparently John Hark's impression is so good that it's not clear who's who.
Shall we have some reviews before we go?
Yes, please. Here we go. So every week we read out reviews from iTunes that feature niche 90s footballers, and they appear in the titles.
Can I just say before I forget, thank you to James Gill, who runs the amazing Always Be Comedy Night. He's now a comedian. He used to be the London paper journalist for Crystal Palace. So that's how we ended up with Ian Dowie. It's the best comedy night in London. There we go.
Fact.
Fact. They've got previews, and June and July.
John Hawkes is doing an hour this Saturday night.
If he doesn't get John Hawkes in, then it's a real error of judgment. Right. So, reviews.
Let's do some reviews. Every week we read out reviews you're leaving on iTunes that feature niche 90s footballers that make us laugh. Michael Pitt's his favourite. They go into the opening titles next week. Here we go. Too hot to handle. Yours sincerely, Dimitri Karin. That's from Mentio.
That's a good one.
We also had a show as good as my dad. Lots of love, Geordie Cruyff. And then lastly, we had absolutely loving this podcast. Despite being too young to enjoy 90s football itself, I have enjoyed learning all about the hilarious absurdities this particular era of football has had to offer. Javier Margas. I wonder if you even remember. Do you know who Javier Margas is?
No, is he a Spurs defender?
No, he's a West Ham defender. West Ham, but now he's married to Chilean royalty.
Is he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, and he
Ivan Zamorano?
Runs a bunch of hotels. I think we should rule out Javier Margas because you will not find any commentary. Yeah,
partly, and also this episode is already, you've hijacked it and made it West Ham heavy.
I apologize.
So I'm going to get rid of him. I would have gone Dimitri Karin, but finding good commentary for a goalkeeper is an absolute nightmare, and I'm not going to have a repetition of the Brian Gunn 5-hour
Brian Gunn hunt.
Yeah, so as a Man United fan, I'm going to go for Cruyff. Cruyff. Yeah.
Congratulations. He's in there. The last titles of the series.
Last week was the titles were Robson and Jerome, and I re-listened to it 4 times because I couldn't work out who was presenting Top of the Pops.
Did you work it out?
Yeah, it was Lee and Herring.
Yes.
It was Stuart Lee and Richard Herring presenting.
Really?
Yeah. I recognised Richard Herring's voice. I was like, why do I recognise that voice? Why do I recognise that voice?
Stuart Lee and Richard Herring presented Top of the Pops.
Robson and Jerome were number one. I mean, what kind of alternate reality was the 90s?
If you haven't ever seen it, it's a very funny sort of Trojan horse takedown of pop music. Whoever put Lee and Herring in there is a mad genius, but they're just, every single link is a really cutting takedown of whoever's coming up. It's great.
Oh, we should do a watch along on that.
Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Ian Dowie. Thank you to Always Be Comedy. Anything else, Michael?
Yeah, we should just say, so the final episode of the series next week is our first ever Quickly Kevin 90s football quiz.
Yeah, so we're going out.
We are joined by friends of the show, Ellis James and Tom Crane. Also, big announcement. We have been recommissioned for a second series.
Thank you.
Yes.
Whoever did that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And if you want to get in touch with the show, here's how you can do so.
Get in touch with the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @quicklykevin. And sign up to the mailing list @quicklykevin.com.
Yeah, that's it. That's it for this week. We're back next week for episode 12, the last of the series. And we should say as well, this quiz, the production value for this series has been poured heavily into this last episode. Yeah. I'd say 80% of total effort for the
first series.
I'm looking
forward to the round where we have to guess who John Hawkes is being.
Wonderful stuff. We'll see you next week for the end of series one.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.